Good afternoon, everybody. It's great that you've chosen to join me today on I Don't Care with me, Dr. Kevin Stevenson. Always appreciate you spending a little bit of time with me every week. How are you liking the new home studio? You know, did a little change since the last podcast. Threw up the diplomas behind me, make me look a little bit smarter than I really am. Hopefully you'll buy that. So let's go ahead and get started. Wanted to introduce today's guest, Jeffrey Roche. Jeffrey is the Senior Vice President for Healthcare Solutions at Rise Point. And Jeffrey and I connected on LinkedIn, and I saw a lot of things in his intro biography that I thought would make a very interesting podcast. Jeffrey, welcome to I Don't Care.
Thank you for having me, Kevin.
Glad that you're here to join us. Starting it all off, you're a son of a nurse. So I'm assuming, you know, that's what drew you to healthcare, but is my assumption correct? And tell us a little bit about you and about your career so far.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you're definitely correct. You know, my mother, you know, in fact, actually, I tell people all the time, I remember, you know, my mother earned her associate's degree in nursing when I was five. And she was a single mom, you know, at the time raising my brother and I. And I'll never forget how excited her mother was. My grandmother, you know, obviously as immigrants from Germany, you know, came over here in 1963 to see her only child go on to earn her associate's degree and then become a nurse, which was my mother's dream. And so as I was growing up, I never actually thought healthcare was going to be the space I went into. I actually thought it was going to be politics. And, you know, I spent time on the Hill when I was in college as an intern on the Hill, worked in Pennsylvania state government for several years, actually when I was in high school and college. And then, you know, it was actually in college where I did a semester long internship at a healthcare system and started to see like the opportunities were just, you know, unlimited. I mean, you just could do so many different things from an administration standpoint. And so my mother's influence, you know, finally had its reach, which she was thrilled about. And, you know, started my career in June 23rd of 2008 at what was then Pocono Health System. And, you know, had a great time there, a decade of service, then actually moved into academia, which was a, you know, neat experience, served on the cabinet, two different academic institutions, really leading all strategy, serving on the board in support of the board as a secretary of the board. And then also helping to launch innovative workforce partnerships with industry. And then, you know, I've have been privileged to do work like that at Common Spirit Health and obviously, just spent time at Siemens leading what was an inaugural role in workforce development, and now have the privilege at Rise Point of leading all of our healthcare strategy, all of our healthcare work on behalf of our academic institutions and the work that they do, the really focus on nursing.
Excellent. Okay, you said Common Spirit. Where were you? Because I was an old CHI person in Nebraska.
Yeah, so at Common Spirit, actually, I was part of their ed tech startup, which is called Dignity Health Global Education.
Yeah.
And so I was part of their founding leadership team and had the privilege of working with Marvin and others on really their vision of how you could create more equity in education through partnering with like Arizona State University, Duke and others. And obviously, you know, that was sort of a neat idea that Common Spirit had, which is how do you really create education through the lens of healthcare and really infuse that? And so it was a really neat experience. And obviously we got to work with folks in Nebraska and, you know, all throughout their territories.
Excellent. Very good. So tell my audience a little bit about Rise Point. I know it is definitely involved in academia, but a little bit more about that, please.
So Rise Point is actually an ed tech company, private equity backed. And, in essence, you know, three different organizations came together to form Rise Point. For those that are in Texas, you know, Texas, particularly folks will remember academic partnerships, which, you know, by far one of the most successful online program managers that helped to scale online education at colleges and universities, both public and private, with, you know, tremendous impact on really transforming an industry that truly needs, you know, quite a bit of transformation. Now, Rise Point came together with the, you know, academic partnerships, the acquisition of Wiley on the higher ed side of online education. And then also Synergis Education, which is actually was a nursing education ed tech company. And now Rise Point has been formed. And, you know, really the focus, at least my focus, is really supporting all of our healthcare programs that our academic partners offer, and then also really infusing that industry aspect into it. So making sure industry remains the top of mind. So really connecting it to industry, really forming strategic relationships, partnerships with hospitals and healthcare systems, and then also really scaling nursing pre-licensure through online education, but also the in-person clinical experience. And so we've got to build a sustainable future-ready nursing workforce. And so that's what our focus is really on.
Okay. So is it solely nursing, or are there other clinical disciplines?
There are certainly others, including respiratory therapy, you know, certainly clinical medical laboratory science, and you know, a litany of others for sure.
Every hospital system that I know is having difficulties recruiting all across the clinical spectrum. And so that's great to hear. So you talked a little bit about workforce development in your, you know, and previously in your career. Tell my audience a little bit about, you know, some of your work, primarily at Siemens. I'd like to hear a lot about that because I'm pretty intimately familiar with them as a partner of ours over the last few years.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously, really was privileged to have asked to join Siemens back in 2022, and then came officially on board in 2023 to really, you know, envision how could Siemens as a global med tech company really be both a connector and a bridge as it relates to the workforce space. And so, you know, obviously for several years, Siemens has had a very active workforce solution space where they're working with hospitals and healthcare systems to, you know, fill those critical technologist roles in imaging through, you know, their program called FlexForce. I was brought in to collaborate internally and then externally with hospitals and healthcare systems, really as a trusted advisor to think through what would it take to build a sustainable future-ready workforce. And, you know, when you think about that, right, I mean, Siemens has these value partnerships, which are with healthcare systems, 10-year strategic relationships. And so a lot of my work was really working with the, you know, chief human resource officer and other leaders on the C-suite to really think about, you know, what are they doing in work-based learning? What are they doing in career pathways? What are they doing with their academic partners to try and influence and change curriculum to make it better fitted to their needs? And what are we doing with our associations? And so I, you know, had a great opportunity in my time there to work with ASRT and really, you know, be play a small part in moving the imaging profession to, for the first time ever, have a career stackable approach in imaging. Mm-hmm. And so think about it. Historically, it's been a space where you have to earn an associate's degree to be a practicing technologist, you know, take that national certification. Now, with the work that Siemens and others have done with ASRT, we now have an actual role that exists that's now been defined, has curriculum, and will continue to be rolled out called imaging medical aid. Which allows the hospital system to hire before license and allow them to do work, you know, in an imaging area. They can't scan, obviously, but they can do work that supports patients. They can do work that supports the technologists. And so a lot of my work was on that future ready aspect.
Yeah. And I'm a huge proponent of everyone working at the top of their license. And that's something that we're finding across all hospitals today is, just with the pressure of, you know, not having enough workers, you know, people are really working so far under their license, just, you know, transporting patients. It's all certainly necessary in the grand scheme of providing healthcare, but, you know, people didn't go to school for multiple years to push a wheelchair every day. Jeffrey, one thing that we're finding, and I think COVID really exacerbated all of this, but I think it was certainly starting beforehand, was just people entering healthcare as a career. So what are you doing at RisePoint, and what have you seen in other places that is helping recruit high schoolers or early college folks that haven't made that decision about a career yet? What's going on out there trying to get people engaged in healthcare?
Well, the good news is, you know, to your point, there's definitely a lot more happening now than there has happened in the past. And, you know, even when I was in my hospital system, we did a lot of work within the community. And, you know, like you and I were talking about before, I think as larger healthcare systems have become larger, we've sort of lost the art of focusing on the community. And, you know, for example, when I was in my healthcare system, we had a medical explorers program. We did all this work with high schools and middle schools. Well, that all stopped once the larger system came in. But what I'm encouraged by is certainly, you know, Bloomberg Philanthropies, you know, their $250 million investment, obviously in Texas, two sites, obviously one with Baylor Scott and White, the other with Memorial Hermann, to build healthcare connected high schools is a good step, you know, in the right direction. Now, I would argue you got to go deeper and even lower than high school. And there's definitely some great work occurring there. I mean, if you look at UW Health in Madison, Wisconsin, they have done a phenomenal job and they've impacted thousands of young people who have now, in many cases, gone on to join their healthcare system in youth apprenticeship roles, all the way on to, you know, full-time employees and earning their college degrees while they're still actually in the classroom, quote unquote, actually working on the job. You know, I just spent, you know, a week in the United Kingdom with several healthcare systems and leaders in this space, really talking about the apprenticeship degree, which I often get frustrated to think we sit in the United States with the largest healthcare economy, the largest number of hospitals, and yet in the higher ed space, we've still not really truly moved to have apprenticeship degrees. You know, you as a leader know if you can learn and earn on the job, retention is going to improve. And you look at what we're seeing in Europe and the impact that we've seen in Europe, where you have people who can be a nurse, a nursing student, and become a nurse and learn and earn on the job as a CNA, working towards that RN. You know, those are the types of models we have to do. And healthcare systems like UW Health are doing that. They have a registered nursing apprenticeship degree with a local technical college. They have a registered respiratory therapy program with a local technical college where they learn and earn on the job. Now, it takes a very different approach. It takes both the academic partner being innovative. It certainly takes a healthcare system wanting to invest in this way. But we have to do that. I think, you know, we have to give people both awareness, but then we also have to give them access. And if you wait beyond age 18, it's too long. It's too far down the road. We have to do it earlier. The other piece I'll say that I did a lot of work at Siemens on and continue to be working on this at RisePoint is, you know, we've got hundreds of thousands of students every year that sit on a waiting list for academic clinical programs. And, you know, for many reasons, we haven't found the right way to address that. There's an academic portion, there's a regulatory and an accreditation aspect, but ultimately it's a broken system and it has to be fixed. And so one of the things that I have been encouraging hospital systems on is find out from those academic institutions how you can attract those students while they're on a waiting list to come and work in critical roles that they could work in, even if it means getting them certified to be a surge tech or patient care tech, and then hire them. And then invest in them to go on and become a nurse. We have to think differently, I think, on these types of matters. And ultimately, we have to think more strategically at the longitudinal view of it, of this versus just, you know, this degree type of approach.
Yeah. And I think you obviously gave a couple of examples of forward-thinking systems moving in this direction. But the vast majority of health systems now are so focused on the here and now. They're not looking down the road. They're not looking at what's the impact going to be 5-10 years down the road? And while many systems are just, you know, hammering their leadership on things like productivity and what you're talking about, it's going to impact productivity. You're also building up as you said, a longitudinal workforce that is invested, you know, that has that opportunity to at least make some money while they're learning. Why is it, in your estimation, that health systems just, they're not seeing the forest for the trees?
Yeah. You know, I think it's a multitude of things, right? To your exact point, I really, truly believe in many cases, it's sort of this element of there's really no owner in many cases. I mean, and if you look at it, right, when we think about academia and we think about a healthcare system, there's kind of multiple owners, right? You've got your functional leaders who, in many cases, are very involved in the clinical experiences. you have, you know, either HR or chief learning officer or another member of the team that's responsible for all the articulation and affiliation agreements. You've got the chief human resource officer who should really be thinking both here and now, but then also ahead. And then you got all these other folks who, you know, clearly also have a critical role in this. Where I've seen healthcare systems be incredibly innovative in this space is where you see somebody just say, you know what, I'm going to own it. Regardless of their title, regardless of their role, they're going to own it. So like Memorial Hermann is a good example where, you know, their chief nursing executive knows that nursing is the largest cost to the healthcare system that's, as we know in the U.S., unreimbursable. And ultimately, also the biggest space that has, you know, some of the most challenging times in workforce. And so, you know, kudos to he and his AVP of nursing at the system level. They said, we're going to own it. And, you know, they worked, continue to work with their foundation team to say, we've got to be successful in building out a healthcare connected high school. You know, I mean, you look at a Northwell Health, right, where, you know, there you have a CEO who owned it. You know, Michael Dowling, you know, said, this is my number one issue. And, you know, I know Michael's team well, and they said, like, Michael was so invested in the academic connection, K through 12, all the way into the higher ed space, that he personally had commitment in there. And I think, in my experience, this is where, again, I take probably a different view of it, but again, I feel like when we go back in time and we would study this issue, when it was a regional healthcare system more in the community, we didn't have these challenges in the same way that we do today. And I think a lot of that is because you had leaders who served locally, would go into the grocery store and see all these folks. I remember my CEO used to say to me, I can't go anywhere without someone finding me and telling me what I need to do. That's not the case as much today.
That's right.
At the system level. And it concerns me because ultimately, you know, I grew up and did a fellowship in the Anchor Institution framework. And I truly believe that both academia and a healthcare system are an anchor institution in the community that they serve. The community either succeeds or fails when you don't have both. And higher ed needs K through 12, and so does industry. And so I always have believed they're all working together. And so I will say that, you know, as far as I'm concerned, everyone at a system level in the C-suite is responsible for workforce development. And it's really incumbent upon them to support the local leaders with investment to make it work. And I'm just fearful that at a system level, we've sort of lost the focus on these areas.
Mm-hmm. You know, I know early in my career, one of the comments that was always made was, well, every market's the same. You know, you can translate. And I bought into that for a while early in my career, but as I grew older and not necessarily wiser, I realized that's not the case. Every market is totally different. You know, there's different challenges. There's different recruitment challenges. You may have compensation challenges that aren't even healthcare driven. You know, case in point, here in Waco, where I am, you know, COVID was actually very generous to this community, I will say, because during that time, our local chamber and our city government and our county did a phenomenal job of economic development. We brought in so many new industries, you know, in the midst of, I think the crown jewel was the 1 million plus square foot Amazon distribution center.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. Bringing in all of these new jobs, bringing new people to the community. But what it did was it raised wages so much that my hospital had to reconsider what we were paying people, you know, our housekeepers, our folks in our laundry, in planetary, because not only could they go to Amazon and make seriously $10 more an hour, but they could also go to the local Chick-fil-A and stand in line, and make an additional $5 to $6 an hour.
Yep.
So, you know, as I said earlier, COVID exacerbated our workforce issue in healthcare, but it really didn't begin it. It was already there, but COVID showed people that healthcare, working in healthcare, is difficult physically, mentally, and emotionally. And so many young people, and honestly, as I'm sure you saw, so many people within the industry just left and chose to go in a totally different direction after many of them, after many, many years of school and training, they just said, it's not worth it. So what, you know, I think you made such a great point that all of this is driven locally. You know, I think one of the big things is local healthcare leaders have got to reemphasize the fact that, you know, whether it's for-profit or not-for-profit healthcare is about people. You are caring for your friends, families, and neighbors. And you've got to instill that into people that, you know, this is a calling. And as you said, it's difficult to do from an ivory tower somewhere else.
Yeah. And I think to your point, right, like I think about it all the time. You know, the other piece of this is you can't view workforce as a transaction. You have to really view it as a long-standing relationship. And so, you know, oftentimes when I sit down, even the work I did at Siemens, I would regularly say to all my colleagues, as I would go into a meeting with the chief human resource officer or their team, I could tell right away whether they were going to have retention issues just by how they would talk about these matters. And unfortunately, it's more common than not.
Right.
They can have more transactional leaders in that space than you do truly transformational leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like you, right, where we've studied understanding of transformational leadership versus transactional, I have long believed that this is one of the reasons why healthcare has suffered, is we have too many transactional leaders that I think have good meaning, but aren't invested into your point, the people part and really the long-term aspect of that. And so, you know, it's one of the reasons why I believe we have so much burnout. One of the reasons why I think we have so much terrible retention.
Yes.
Because we've sort of forgotten the people side of it. And that's not what I saw in a decade in a regional community healthcare system.
Yeah.
What I saw was very, very different. But it is what I saw when I went into the larger system. You know, I think that's the piece that gravely concerns me. And I regularly write about this. I mean, one of the things that I've been critical of is really boards. There's no one more apt to ensure from a governance structure that these matters are important than a board, you know, because ultimately they hold the CEO responsible. And if you're on a board of a system or if you're on a board of a local facility, as far as I'm concerned, you should still care about what are you doing for your workforce? Because guess what? That's your biggest cost. And so when you think about fiduciary, to me, that's fiduciary. There's no way of arguing it's not. And yet, you know, I feel like boards have not necessarily been as engaged on these matters as I believe they should be.
Now, I would definitely agree with that. And again, it goes towards the decentralized approach. Here we go. I sound old. Back in the day, when hospitals had boards, there were people, you know, there were the local banker, there were local attorneys, there were local politicians. Yeah, they had that fiduciary responsibility, but they cared about their people. And now you're seeing people on these, on the large health system boards that have never even visited one of their hospitals and are making decisions based upon, frankly, a textbook versus practical boots on the ground experience.
You know, I look back on my healthcare time where our board members had to round.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, they had to round with the executives and at times they had to round with other team members. And, you know, I can remember, you know, because I was involved in all external affairs of my system, I can remember the board chair calling one time and just alerting me to the fact that he was in the emergency room with his spouse, and he was just seeing some things that just concerned him from a throughput end.
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, I remember calling the CEO because he called me first. And the CEO said, well, why are you calling me? There's a reason he called you. Figure it out. And I thought, well, that's your boss. So I just want to let you. And ultimately, you know, what he was alerting us to was that there were some staffing issues that needed to be dealt with. And, you know, I had a role as an administrator on call to help make sure that we dealt with that. And that's an important element here, right? I mean, when staff know that at the highest levels of an organization, people care, it's a very different situation. Now, to your earlier point, right? I mean, we're losing so many talented people, even at the leadership level, that I get so concerned. I mean, we have really very little middle management left as it is.
That's right.
You think about succession planning. I mean, this is, people aren't paying enough attention to this.
Mm-hmm.
And it is very, very scary, and it only will get scarier.
Boy, you just hit on a topic that I've talked about for a long time, succession planning, because there are so few people behind the C-suite folks today. And, and for a variety of reasons, you know, whether it be consolidation, reductions in force, you name it. But that's concerning. I mean, it's incredibly concerning because I think, and I'm making a real generalized statement here, I think a lot of the younger leaders that are on that path are more transactional versus transformational.
100%. 100%. Yeah. And to your point, I mean, I'm a millennial, right? And so I'm a good example where I came into a larger system, you know, after we were acquired. Left because I was not, you know, very different experience, came back into another larger system, saw awful leadership, left, and I've never come back to hospital administration because in all honesty, I just made a decision that I'm going to try to change it from outside versus try to change it from inside. And, you know, I find more and more of my peers that have had the same experience are doing the same exact thing. I mean, we lose talented people more into the startup space and the entrepreneurial space. And I think, you know, at some point, someone has to recognize that you've got to change some things to keep good talent. I just don't get the sense that, particularly at the larger system level, either they don't care or they don't really think it's that big of an issue.
Man, time just flew all down. Holy cow. We're bumping up against 30 minutes here. Any last words?
There is really no greater calling than serving in healthcare. And I think we definitely have to continue to do what we can to make the necessary changes while we also look to attract individuals into it that hopefully can also be kind of the future of it. Mm-hmm. And anything in my view that we can do in that space is always going to be top of mind in the work that I do in my work today, but also in the work that, you know, we'll do in the future.
Boy, that's a great final word. I appreciate that. Jeffrey Roche, Senior Vice President of Healthcare Solutions at RisePoint. Really enjoyed the conversation. Anytime that that we can get close to getting a little bit more clarity on our workforce and healthcare, I'm all for that. So with that, folks, that's another episode of I Don't Care with me, Dr. Kevin Stevenson. Thanks for joining me, and we will see you again next week. Take care.